Imagine, for a moment, the night shift at a large shipping port somewhere on the coast. It is 2 in the morning, and the port is quietly working at full capacity. Enormous cranes, lit by floodlights against the dark sky, are lifting steel shipping containers off the deck of a ship that arrived earlier in the evening. Each container is the same size as every other container. Each one has a unique number stenciled on its side. Each one is being placed onto the back of a waiting truck, or onto a stack of other containers, or onto a flatbed rail car that will carry it to a different city before sunrise. There are computers tracking every container. There are crane operators in glass cabins 50 feet up. There are dispatch supervisors with clipboards. There are people moving in coordinated patterns across the floodlit yard, doing work that, taken together, will move tens of thousands of containers tonight, and that has been happening on this same scale every night for decades. The interesting thing about this whole scene, the part that the casual visitor never notices, is that almost nobody who is not in the shipping business has any idea this is happening. The goods inside the containers will arrive at stores and warehouses tomorrow. The customers will buy them next week. None of those customers will ever think about the port. The port is invisible to them. It is just the infrastructure underneath the world they live in. A very similar thing has been happening in computing for the last several years in a way that is even more invisible than the shipping port. The infrastructure underneath the modern internet, the small operating systems and runtimes and schedulers that move data around the way the cranes move containers, has been quietly rewritten piece by piece in a single programming language. Almost no end user of the internet has noticed. But the people running the ports, the people who care about the throughput, the latency, the cost per container, have noticed enormously, and they are not going back. This is Rust, gently. A patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 33, Cloud Native Infrastructure. Today we're going to talk about the deepest, quietest, and possibly most consequential corner of Rust's industrial adoption. We're going to look at the infrastructure of the cloud, the small piece of software that runs every Amazon Lambda call, the operating systems that host the containers of the modern web, the runtimes that schedule the world services. We're going to see why this layer of the software stack has, more than almost any other, made the decision to bet on Rust. By the end of the episode, you will understand the scale of this commitment, and you will know why, when the largest cloud providers in the world had to choose what to write their next generation of infrastructure in, they all, more or less independently, picked the same language. Let me back up to what cloud infrastructure actually is. When you use any modern web service, when you log into a bank, send a message, watch a video, almost certainly that service is not running on a single dedicated server somewhere. It is running on a small slice of a much larger cluster of computers, owned by a company like Amazon Web Services, or Microsoft Azure, or Google Cloud Platform. The cluster is enormous. It is shared among thousands or tens of thousands of customer applications. The work of dividing up the cluster, of making sure each application gets the resources it needs, of starting and stopping small isolated environments where the customer code can safely run, of routing traffic from the outside world to the right slice at the right moment, is the work of what is called the cloud infrastructure. It is the port underneath the modern internet. It is enormous, and it is mostly invisible. For most of the early history of cloud computing, this infrastructure was written in languages that were the standard of their time. Some of it was in C. Some of it was in Java. A lot of it, in the cloud-native generation that started around 2015, was written in Go, the language we have mentioned a few times in this show, designed at Google specifically for this kind of work. Go is good for it. Go is still good for it. Many parts of the cloud are still written in Go, and that is fine. But starting around 2018, in a few specific places, something different started to happen. Amazon Web Services launched a piece of software called Firecracker. Firecracker is what is called a micro VM, A very small, very fast, very isolated environment for running customer code. Every time anyone in the world calls an Amazon Lambda function, a Firecracker micro VM starts up, runs the code, and shuts down in less than a second. Firecracker, by some measures, is one of the busiest pieces of software ever written. It runs millions of times per minute, every day around the world. And Firecracker is written in Rust. Why Rust? The reasoning, when the Amazon team published their explanation, was specific and instructive. Firecracker has to start fast. It cannot afford the startup time of a garbage collector. It has to be small. It cannot afford the runtime overhead of a richer language. It has to be safe. The smallest memory bug in software running customer code from thousands of different organizations would be catastrophic. The only language that gave Amazon all three of those properties, fast startup, small footprint, memory safety, and forced to compile time, was Rust. They built Firecracker in Rust deliberately after careful evaluation, and the bet has paid off in the years since. Firecracker was just the first of several. Amazon also launched an operating system called BottleRocket, written in Rust, designed specifically for hosting container workloads. The operating system is the thing that sits between the hardware and the containerized customer applications. BottleRocket is, like Firecracker, optimized for the specific demands of the cloud. Fast startup, minimal footprint, memory safety, the same three properties in the same combination served by the same language. Outside of Amazon, the pattern has continued. Cloudflare wrote their entire web proxy in Rust, replacing the older C-based proxy they had been using, and a new one, called Pingora, has come up in this show several times. Cloudflare's reasoning was the same as Amazon's. The work is fast, dangerous, and critical, and Rust was the only language that gave them all three of the properties they needed. Microsoft has been quietly rewriting parts of the Windows server infrastructure in Rust for the same reasons. Google has been building parts of its newer cloud services in Rust. The pattern is consistent across the major providers, and it has held steady for years. What is interesting, when you look at this from a distance, is that the cloud infrastructure layer is, in some ways, the perfect proving ground for Rust. The work is high stakes. The performance requirements are extreme. The cost of a bug is enormous. The cost of slow service is also enormous, at the scale of millions of operations per second. The traditional trade-off between safety and speed, which most languages force you to make, is exactly the trade-off the cloud cannot afford. The cloud needs both. Rust gives both. And so, slowly, the cloud has converted. For real production work. The implications of this are still unfolding. A new wave of cloud-native infrastructure is being built, almost entirely in Rust, by companies whose entire business depends on the performance and safety of their underlying platforms. The container runtime called Containerd is getting Rust plugins. The networking layer that handles east-west traffic between cloud services is increasingly Rust. The service meshes that route traffic between microservices are increasingly Rust. The distributed databases that hold the cloud state are increasingly Rust. Wherever the work is hard, where the performance matters, where the safety cannot be compromised, Rust is showing up. For you, the listener, what this means is harder to see directly, but it is real. The internet you use every day is being slowly rebuilt out of a different material than it was rebuilt out of 10 years ago. The applications you interact with are starting slightly faster, behaving slightly more predictably, costing the companies behind them slightly less to run. These small improvements compound. Over years, the cumulative effect is a different internet, one with better tail latencies, lower energy costs, fewer mysterious outages, more predictable behavior under load. None of this is dramatic. None of it gets headlines. It is just this slow, steady replacement of an old material with a new one in the foundation of something that almost everyone uses but almost nobody thinks about. There's one more thing worth saying about what this kind of adoption tells us. When the most demanding, most cost-sensitive, most safety-critical software in the world picks a language, the rest of the industry tends to follow eventually. Cloud infrastructure has always been ahead of the rest of computing in adopting new techniques because the economics force it to be. The cloud providers picked Rust years ago. The middle of the industry is now starting to follow. The end of the industry will follow after that. The pattern is the same one that played out with previous technologies, and the cloud choice is, in many ways, a leading indicator of what the rest of computing will look like 5 and 10 years from now. The economic argument behind this is worth spelling out, because it is sometimes hidden behind technical jargon. At the scale of a major cloud provider, the difference between a piece of infrastructure that uses 10% less memory and one that uses 10% more is not a small cost. It is on the bill at the end of the year, tens of millions of dollars in electricity and hardware. The difference between a service that starts in 20 milliseconds and one that starts in 200 is not a small detail. It is the difference between being able to charge for sub-second compute and not. The choice of language at this scale is not aesthetic. It is a multi-million dollar engineering decision made carefully with the math written out by people whose job it is to make exactly that kind of decision. When the math comes out the way it has consistently come out for Rust, the answer follows. The cloud providers did not adopt Rust because Rust is fashionable. They adopted it because the numbers worked. There is a final observation worth making about the people doing this work. The engineers who staff these cloud infrastructure teams are some of the most experienced systems programmers in the industry. Many of them spent decades writing C and C++ before Rust existed. They're not naive about the costs of switching languages. They have lived through previous language transitions that did not pan out. When this particular group of engineers of all groups decides that Rust is worth committing to, that is informative in a way that is hard to overstate. They're not betting on Rust because they were told to. They are betting on Rust because, after careful evaluation, they concluded that the alternative is worse for the work they are responsible for. Their judgment is one of the most credible signals available in the industry today about where systems programming is going. It is worth being concrete about a few of the specific projects that are doing this work because the list reads like a who's who of important infrastructure. Firecracker, which we have already mentioned, runs every Amazon Lambda call. Bottle Rocket runs containers across Amazon and beyond. Cloudflare's Pingora handles a substantial fraction of all dynamic web traffic. The container runtime called Containerd has Rust components and is increasingly written in Rust by extension. The new generation of service meshes, the systems that route traffic between microservices inside a single application's architecture, are increasingly Rust. The networking layers in modern operating systems, including parts of the Linux kernel networking stack, are increasingly Rust. Each of these is a critical piece of infrastructure on its own. Taken together, they form the substrate on which most of the modern internet runs. The migration is not a single dramatic event. It is a slow accumulation of careful decisions, project by project, that adds up to a different foundation. Three things to carry away from today. The first is that the deepest, quietest layer of modern computing, the cloud infrastructure that runs underneath everything else, has been steadily and deliberately rewritten in Rust over the last several years by the largest cloud providers in the world for reasons that are specific and well-reasoned. The second is that the combination of fast startup, small footprint, and compile-time memory safety, the exact combination that Rust offers and that almost no other language offers, has turned out to be the precise set of properties the cloud needs, which is why the conversion has been so consistent across so many independent organizations. The third is that the cloud is, in this and in many other ways, a leading indicator of where the rest of computing is going, and the decision that the cloud has made to bet on Rust is a signal that the next decade of software is going to look meaningfully different from the last one. Next time on Rust, gently, we will return to the language itself and continue building up your understanding of how to read and write it. We have spent this small stretch of episodes looking outward at the world Rust is reshaping, and the next stretch will return inward to the syntax and the patterns and the small, steady accumulation of fluency. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.